Thank you for joining us for this chapel message from the campus of Columbia International University in Columbia, South Carolina. Our mission at CIU is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ.
I got to make a confession. I'm really feeling guilty that I didn't bring donuts today. I usually do because my plan A is that I say something that's worthwhile, but I know that at some point in time be forgotten, and I'm always happy to be remembered as the guy that brought the donuts the time he spoke. But well, I promise you this, next time I come to campus, there'll be donuts for everyone, okay? So. The theme of what I was going to share with you today is faith in the workplace, and it's just such a perfect time because Lynn and John have just embodied that for so long and just represent that so beautifully. And but it's funny, when I pulled up to the administration building yesterday, I got to spend yesterday on your campus, beautiful campus, and I couldn't help but look what was etched in stone, and it was very wonderful to know him and to make him known. And I thought, well, that's really the theme. That's the way you take faith into the workplace, into the marketplace, is you've got to spend time getting to know him better, and you've got to spend time sharing what you know with others. So with that as a background, I'm going to give you an overview that I want you to be thinking about while I share my thoughts, and I'll come back to this at the end, but this is a scripture that I just want you to keep this in the back of your mind as I'm speaking. It's from Psalms chapter 127, verse 1. It says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchmen stand guard in vain." Very important verses, and I'll tell you why when we get to the end. But it's 127:1, just etch that because that's the verse you can turn to many times in your life. So my theory, what I learned as I went along, I was raised in a Christian household, but I'll be honest with you, when I was your age, I had no idea that what I should be working toward is connecting my Christian faith with my career. It just didn't occur to me. So I had them totally compartmentalized. Wasn't nearly as wise as those of you who have chosen this wonderful university to get your degree. So I'll tell you, I think there are three stages of sharing your faith in the workplace. One is the one that I started with, which is leaving your faith on the doorstep of the building when you walk in. Believing what you read in the paper, that we're supposed to keep it separate, and that's for other people, but you don't want to offend anyone by letting them know you're a Christian. Second stage is bringing your faith in the back door. You do that by occasionally telling someone in your workplace that you'll pray for them, reminding them how blessed we are, little buzzwords that kind of begin to share a little bit that maybe there's a faith-based person inside you, that the Spirit may be somewhat alive in you. And the third stage is when you learn that every single day when you go to that workplace, whether it's a mission field, whether it's in the church as a minister, whether it's in a business career, that you bring Christ right in the front door with you. And I'll tell you what happens. If you do that, you'll find out you're no longer bringing Christ in the front door with you. You'll find out that he's carrying you in the front door with him. And it's a tremendous transition. So how did I discover this, and why was I so slow? Well, I was in the middle of my back door stage, you know, beginning to get a lot of nerve. I was CEO and chairman of a public company, and I really believed all this stuff that public companies have to really be careful. You can't act like Chick-fil-A. You can't have scripture on the wall. And so I was being very cautious with my faith at this company. And I'm riding home from South Carolina beach, back roads, heading back to Charlotte. And I'm listening to a talk radio station. This is a good number of years ago. And there's an interview taking place. And the interviewer is interviewing a Midwestern football coach. And I wish I could tell you that I'd written it down, who it was, what his name was, what school was, but it was a small Midwestern college or university, the football coach. And I was spellbound by the answers this coach was giving this interviewer to the questions he was asking, and his just powerful testimony he was giving. And sure enough, at the very end, after they were through, the interviewer said to the interviewee, to the coach, he said, "Coach," he said, "these are some amazing answers." He said, "Why didn't you go into the ministry?" And the coach, without hesitating, said words I'll never forget. "Football is my ministry. Football is my ministry." And it was at that moment, alone in a car, late at night, traveling the back roads of South Carolina, that I realized he's right. My life can be my ministry. I don't have to be in a pulpit. Praise those that are, by the way. I don't have to be in a foreign mission field. Praise those that are. But if you're called to something else, it has nothing to do with whether you're a full-time minister. You can minister wherever you go, whatever you're doing. So fortunately, I had that experience and began to learn that before I went to Krispy Kreme. I was retired, and I won't go into the saga of what was going wrong at Krispy Kreme, but I'd gone on the board, and the stock had dropped from $50 a share to $1 a share, and you don't even want to know the lawsuits and the litigation and all that was taking place. And we tried to, as a board member, we tried to patch it up. They asked me to step up as chair, but we just couldn't quite get it right. And so the board finally said, Jim, why don't you come out of retirement and take over the CEO role as well? And I told them I had just recently learned how to spell donut the right way, much less did I know how to make them. And, you know, we spell it D-O-U-G-H. There's another company that spells it a little simpler than that. So Peg and I prayed about it, and this is really going to sound strange, I know, and this is what I hope happens to you wherever you go. But it was clear as a bell that God was calling us to Krispy Kreme. And I didn't know why, but it was so clear through our prayers. So a month later, I told the board I would do it. And we moved to Winston-Salem, and we went in to this company that was distraught and bedeviled, literally, and in trouble. And I knew that I couldn't do it, but I knew that we could do it, and I knew that if I followed His will, that the odds were much greater that we would succeed. So what did I do? And these are things that I hope you'll take note of, because they're things you can do in whatever workplace you may go to. We did three or four quick things. First thing I did was I talked to HR, human resources, and I said, what do these people need? They've been so downtrodden for years now. And she said, they need some time off. Retail's a tough business. I'm sure a lot of people here are in retail. It's a tough business. The hours are long. The holidays are your busiest days. And so she said they need some time off. So we came up with a plan. And we said every summer between Memorial Day and Labor Day, we're going to give every one of our team members 4 days off. The catch was they had to take them on a Friday or a Monday, obviously extend the weekend. That was condition number one. Condition number two was they had to use it for one of three purposes. They had to use it to extend their faith, and that we didn't define that for them, okay? Go do something in your church, go on a retreat, whatever it may be. Extend your faith. Spend time with your family you could not otherwise have spent. Maybe you've got a child that's got an activity that you miss all the time. And the third was make a difference in your community. And we called them Faith, Family, and Community Days, in that order, on purpose, to make sure everybody understood what the priorities of this were. And that they got abbreviated F, F, and C, but everybody knew what the first F was all about. It was about faith. It was a powerful, powerful decision. And you wouldn't believe within months, on Fridays and Mondays, I'd see entire groups of our team members gathered in jeans or shorts or T-shirts, going to work in a homeless shelter or do Habitat for Humanity. Incredible things took place. It was powerful. Second thing we did was a young man came up to me early on. He said, Mr. Morgan, I want to do a devotional and send it out through our in-house email. And I had said two things to him. I said, number one, my name's not Mr. Morgan, it's Jim. I said, my father's Mr. Morgan, but I'm way too young to be Mr. Morgan. Still am, by the way. If any of y'all speak to me afterwards, Jim works real well with me. And I said, secondly, I don't know whether we can do that. I've got to check with the general counsel. And I went to the general counsel, and I could see him shaking his head like this, and I said, time out, Daryl. Let's make sure you know where we are. I don't want you to tell me we can't do this. I want you to tell me how we can do this. So we came up with a plan. It turned out we were totally within our rights as long as it didn't go out to anyone who hadn't asked to be on the mailing list. Well, you can imagine what happened when the word got out that there was a morning devotional. I mean, everyone who had any Christian faith at all wanted to be on it. So within a couple of weeks, hundreds of us in our corporate headquarters building and other buildings were having the same devotional every morning. And we could walk through the halls and I could say, Mark, I don't know about you, but that devotional hit me dead center today. Those kind of conversations started taking place. Third, we had several groups come to me and said they'd like to do some Bible studies in the building. So how do we accommodate that? We gave meeting rooms and we said, you've got to do it on your time. So you've got to do it in the morning before 8:30, during your lunch hour, or in the afternoon after 5 or 5:30. And they sprung up and they were unbelievable. We went to one group because my board was not a fully Christian board. A couple of them were far from that. And I said, do me a favor, move from the meeting room to our board room. Now the board room at Krispy Kreme was considered kind of off limits to everybody but the board members. I said, no. Go there, and I said, I'm going to ask for a favor. Pray for our board and our wisdom, and pray that we're godly in our decisions every time that you meet there every week. So we had a board room that was prayed over every single week. Then the fourth thing we did was we didn't have a mission statement. And I talked to everybody about the mission statement. What do you see our mission being? And quite frankly, the answer was the same for every one of them. keep in mind, we are in a bad hole. Well, one of the major magazines at that time had just printed a cover story listing a series of companies that weren't going to survive the coming year, and we were at the top of the list. Had a picture of a donut on the cover of a Krispy Kreme saying they won't be here a year from now. So people were down. People were believing all this stuff. So we said, we've got to get a mission statement. And they said, well, the answer is we just have a mission statement. Let's just sell more donuts and coffee and let's try to make money for a change. And matter of fact, when I asked them what our mission was, they looked at me kind of funny, thinking, well, if you don't know, how do we know? But in any event, my first meeting was an auditorium about several times this size. We had all of our Winston-Salem employees there. And first thing I said to them after introducing myself to those that I hadn't met was, I've got to tell you something. I've gone around talking about our mission, and every one of you that I've talked to have told me our mission is to sell more donuts and to get profitable. And I looked them straight in the eye and I said, if that is our mission, this is my last day with you, and I don't want to resign today. So together, let's come up with something bigger than that, something more important than that. The mission statement we came up with over the coming year was to touch and enhance lives through the joy that is Krispy Kreme. And if thank God didn't have a sense of humor, that we didn't do this on purpose. The mission statement has 12 words and we do sell our donuts by the dozen. So that worked out. that worked out real well. What those of us that were in Christ, the believers in there, we adopted that same mission statement for our personal statements at Krispy Kreme. We just changed the last two words to touch and enhance lives through the joy that is Jesus Christ. So every time that mission statement showed up, we were thinking, Jesus Christ, would he be pleased with this? Are we living that? Are we shining his light? So those are the four things we did. And you might ask, okay, did it make a difference? I'm going to give you an example. Did it make a difference corporately? Absolutely. If you asked me how that company turned around, I would tell you it was not through leadership. It was not through strategic decision making. It wasn't through a master plan. It wasn't even through the incredible hard work. All those were there. But it turned around because of something that's already been mentioned today, because of the culture. Because the culture became Christ-like. Not everyone was a Christian. We welcomed non-Christians. We welcomed non-Christians. But it was a Christ-like culture. That's why that company turned around. And I think he smiled upon us. He didn't turn the company around for us. He smiled upon us, and we smiled at him every day. So here's how it made a difference. Let me give you the real way. It made a difference corporately. It made a difference financially. Our shareholders got happy, et cetera. But here's the real way it made a difference. Story. Quick story. My marketing guy comes down. Some of you may be in marketing, maybe studying marketing. My marketing guy comes down and says, boy, Jim, I've got a great idea for a new marketing campaign. I said, what's that, Dwayne? He said, we're going to celebrate Talk Like a Pirate Day. I just laughed. I said, there's no such thing as Talk Like a Pirate Day. Are you making this up? He said, no. He said, almost every day of the calendar year, you can find something that you're supposed to celebrate that day. He said, it comes in, I think it was September. And I said, well, what are we going to do to celebrate it? He said, well, you're going to love this. He said, we're going to give away a free donut to everyone who comes in and talks like a pirate. And I'm thinking, now remember, we're losing money, okay? And he's telling me this great idea about giving away our donuts that we're trying to sell. We need no more customers like Dr. Smith. But that eating a dozen at a time is good for our bottom line. So I'm just amazed. And I say, Dwayne, we can't do that. Well, how do you talk like a pirate anyway? He said, well, just say arg. Or say, Polly want a cracker or something like that. I said, okay, we'll make it easy for him. That's good. He said, wait a minute, you hadn't heard the best part. I said, it can't get better than that. He said, the best part is if they come in dressed like a pirate with at least three pieces of pirate paraphernalia, we'll give them a dozen donuts. It took me a while to recover from that one, I want to tell you. And I said, Dwayne. But after his excitement, and by the way, that was his job, and I believe in empowerment, I wasn't the marketing head, he was. I surrendered. Now, I will tell you, going up to that week, I was dreading that day, and I was dreading the following Monday when I was going to get the financial numbers on that day. Remember, we were trying to earn money for a change, and this was not going to be a powerful weekend for sure. So I got the head of U.S. operations to go out with me, and we visited about six or seven stores that day. The good news is people were lined up, and there were traffic jams in some of the stores. The bad news is the only internal line that was not busy was the cash register. There was nobody lined up at the cash register. They were all lined up to get their dozen donuts. So I'm not sure how I feel about that day. I've sort of missed the spirit of it. I get up Monday morning to go to work to read my mail and get ready for that financial report, which I was going to get that afternoon. And in the mail, there was a letter, you know, with a return address in Winston-Salem. So I opened it up. I tried to open all my mail. And here's what was in there. And I'm paraphrasing. It was from a mother. This is hard for me, I apologize. It was from a mother whose son had leukemia, young son, and who, as she made clear, was dying of leukemia. He was at the stage where he was in his bedroom full time now and couldn't turn over, and he lived with his iPad, couldn't talk very loud. And she said she walked in the previous Wednesday and to see how he was doing, and he whispered to her, "Mom," said, "I want to go to Krispy Kreme." She said, "What?" He said, "I want to go to Krispy Kreme." Now, he didn't say it as loud as I'm saying it, but she heard what she got down close. And he said, "Why?" And he pointed to his social media on his iPad. And he said, "They're giving away donuts. I can have my own dozen donuts just for me." She smiled, and son of a gun if they didn't do it. So they got him dressed, and they carried him to the car. They took him to our Stratford Road store, and they walked in, and our general manager, who was a Christian, who believed in our mission statement strongly, saw this young man who had trouble, physical troubles, being brought in, and immediately, while the young man had a bandana, a patch, and a sword. Our general manager drew his sword on him, and they had a sword fight right there in the lobby. This is what she's telling me in the letter. She said they had a sword fight and had a great time. She said everybody in the store stopped to watch the sword fight. And she said, "We got him home, and we put him down. We put the donuts in a chair by the bed." And she said, "Mr. Morgan, here's what I want to tell you. Our son had not smiled in weeks, and we thought we would never, ever see him smile again." She said, "On Friday this past week, we heard him laugh. We heard him laugh." And she said it was a gift of all gifts, and she wanted to thank Krispy Kreme for giving him that gift. So was it worth it to change our culture and have people like that general manager that would affect a life? If we accomplished nothing else that day but to touch that young man's life and to touch that family's life and let them see him have joy in the midst of the sorrow that they were feeling for him, it was worth it. And I tell you what, I didn't worry about the numbers, because I said, how foolish was I that Friday when I went around, instead of seeing the lines and seeing the joy and seeing the smiles, I was looking at the cash register. And I told myself, I will never, ever do that again. So it made a difference. I'm gonna skip over pretty quickly here. What can you do similar to that? How, even as a student now, can you take faith into the career you choose? Ministry, mission field, business? Absolutely. And I urge you to do it and find ways. Keep in mind, the person that brought the devotional to our company was not a senior person. He was a very new young person. Keep in mind, the person that changed that young man's life was not me or one of my senior staff. It was the manager of a store, you know, having a sword fight with him. You can do it. How can you do it as a student? You've got to do it. You've got to find ways to do it. My guess is you can walk in y'all's dining area anytime, and somewhere in there, there'll be a person sitting alone. That person may be alone because they want to be. They may be alone because they got a book open, they're studying. Or they may be alone because they don't have anybody to sit with. Leave your friends. Leave your friends and go sit with that person. Introduce yourself. See what their name is. Get to know them. You got maintenance people. I had an incredible time going around the campus yesterday. Saw some of you. It was the most wonderful experience. I've never seen a campus with people so happy in my life. You got maintenance people. You got security people. You've got all sorts of people on this campus that you're passing every day. Don't just speak to them. Ask them what their name is. And next time you walk by them, call them by name. People hearing their name is one of the greatest gifts you can give them. Call them by name. You've probably got somewhere, if you're like I am, you've got a great aunt that sent you a Christmas present every year, and it was the ugliest pair of socks that the world's ever seen. And you didn't like them, you didn't care about them. When you got to her present, your parents made you open it up, but then you just put it aside as quickly as you could because you were hoping something good was coming next. Call that great aunt. Call that great aunt. You don't have to thank her for the ugly socks if you don't want to. But thank her for caring enough about you to remember you every Christmas. There's so many things you do. I bet you had a teacher in grammar school, middle school, or high school that you've never really fully explained the impact they have on you. You know what it would mean for that teacher for you to get in touch with them? Say, "I just want you to know, I've never forgotten your class, and I've never forgotten what you meant to me." You would change that life that day. So can you do it as a student right now in your life? Absolutely. And I urge you urge you to do it. And I think from this point forward, what I urge you to do as students is don't worry so much about building your resume from this point forward, because that's for man. Be concerned and focused on building your life from this point forward, because that's for God. And your resume will work out just fine. So here's my closing question for you. Have you ever got ready to go to sleep at night and asked yourself the following question? Whose life is better off because I was here today? Whose life did I shine His light on today? And if you're like me, if you do that every night, there are many nights you're not sure the answer is anybody. And that's okay. But all you need to do is wake up the next morning and say, I'm going to do that. Find a way with somebody you pass to make a difference. Call your parents and say, thank you for giving me this opportunity to get this education. You can do something to make somebody's life better that day. And I urge you to do it, to make that call, to say thank you, to tell somebody you love them. Shine His light. You can do it in an elevator with a stranger. You can do it with a cashier. The grumpiest cashier in the history of the world that you just experienced at the grocery store, she needs you or he needs you more than the person that's pleasant and sweet to you. So say something sweet to them. Make their day a little bit better. I think that's what the Cooks have done with their life. I mean, I'm just getting to know Lynn, but I think that's what the Cooks have done with their life. They've set a great example. So every time you walk by that building down there and you see that name, John Cook Jr., you think of Lynn and John, and you think about, you know what, I want to be more like them because of this. If you're more like them, you'll be more like Christ, and that's what they're trying to be, more like Christ, and we can do it. So that's my closing question for you. I'm going back to Psalms 127:1. We have a choice in life. We can build our careers, our houses, our homes, our businesses, our churches, you know, without Him at the head. We can build a city. Those of you that are Columbia natives, you can build a city without Him at the head. But if you do that, if you spend your life doing that, you are living in vain. And wouldn't it be a shame to leave this earth and realize that all you had done, no matter how well it looked on paper, had been done in vain. So keep Him dead center. And I'm going to give you a challenge. It's a challenge for me too. When you walk out of here today, here's a challenge I want all of us to take. From this point forward, as you go through life, I challenge you to walk more slowly and to bow more often. Walk more slowly with Him and bow more often to Him. And if you do that, and if I do that, and if we do that, I assure you, not only will your life be richer and better, but the world you live in will be richer and better. That will be a life worth living for Him. Praise God. Thank you.
We hope you found this message a blessing to your life. More Columbia International University Chapel messages are available at iTunes and at podcast.ciu.edu. Learn more about CIU's undergraduate, seminary, and graduate programs at our website, ciu.edu. Columbia International University educates people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for the opportunity to minister to you today.